अर्जुनस्यादौ कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद्गीता भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ टू कंप्लीट द सिक्स्थ चैप्टर, लास्ट टू वर्सेस, एंड देन वी विल स्टार्ट विद द सेवंथ चैप्टर। सिक्स्थ चैप्टर हैज 47 वर्सेस, सो लेट्स स्टार्ट विद द 46th वर्स। 37 टू 46 आंसर्ड अर्जुनस सिक्स्थ क्वेश्चन। So, Arjuna's second question rather. First, from 33-34, Arjuna asked a question that the mind is difficult to control. And the second question he asked from 37 to 39 is, what happens to a person who is not able to succeed in the path of yoga, in the path of transcendence in general? And that Krishna answered from 40 to 45. And now Krishna gives the conclusion of this chapter in 46 and 47. Let's look at the verses. Tapasvibhyo adhiko yogi, jnanibhyo api mato adhiko, karmibhyascha adhiko yogi, tasmad yogi bhava arjuna. So tapasvi is a person who performs austerities. So better than a person who performs austerities is a person who does yoga, adhiko yogi. Better than a person who is a jnani, jnanibhyo api mato adhikaha. Greater than a jnani is a person who is a yogi. And greater than a karmi is also a person who is a yogi. And therefore Arjuna should be a yogi. So, in this chapter, Krishna seems to be offering a very strong endorsement of yoga. Naturally, the chapter is about yoga. So, naturally, Krishna will talk about yoga. At the same time, he will see in the next verse that he is talking about a yoga which leads to a particular perfection. So, here, the word yoga primarily focuses on the concept of a connection with the absolute truth. So, having a connection with the absolute truth through yoga, whichever form of yoga that one might follow, having a connection is more important than just doing austerities, than just cultivating knowledge, or just doing work. So the point here is, connection with the absolute truth is preferable to any other things which may be considered spiritual by others. So the point is the connection. Yoga means, as we know, connection. So now in the purport, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes this point very clearly. When we speak of yoga, we refer to linking our consciousness with the supreme absolute truth. And then it is possible by various processes. So then Prabhupada explains here, what are the problems with other processes? So, asceticism without self-knowledge is imperfect. So that means, one is doing austerity, but one is not actually connecting with one's inner reality. One is not connecting with the supreme inner reality, that is Krishna. Then, self-knowledge actually refers not just to the knowledge of Atma, but also refers to knowledge of Atma as a part of the Supreme. So, mere asceticism is not of much use. It may be used in terms of for improving one's health, but from the transcendental perspective, it is not of much use. Medas ched halani avgahanani chakatsnanam. So, in Kulashekhar Maharaj's Mukunda Mala Stotra, he says that without remembrance of Krishna, fasting is simply an exercise for fat removal. It is not medas cheda falani. Meda is fat. Actually, cheda, to get rid of it. Medas cheda falani. So, it's not actually going to lead to any spiritual advancement in and of itself. There are people who fast for health benefits. In fact, just like we have japa retreats, yoga retreats, there are doctors who specialize in what they call as fasting retreats. So what are these fasting retreats? The idea is it's a derivative from nature therapy. The idea is the body has healing capacity within itself, and if you just allow the body free rein, then the body will heal whatever damaging stimuli are there coming. So then the idea is that as long as you're eating new food, then the body's energies get diverted to digesting that food. A person fasts, then under a doctor's supervision, then the body's energy is no longer caught up in digesting new food, the body's energy is available for healing itself, cleansing itself and healing itself, repairing itself basically. So the point is, this may be popular among some people and it may work also at the physical level. There are instances where people had diseases which were incurable by normal means, which got cured just by fasting for a substantial amount of time. So people may fast for health reasons, and that has got nothing to do with spiritual realization. Similarly, people may fast just to negate the drives of the body, just to prove that, yeah, I can control myself. So, of course, the most popular reason people may fast nowadays is just to get down weight. In our society, the society where obese people, you know, people who are fat, are almost treated like untouchables. Not just untouchables, unseeables. You know, people who are too fat, people just, even if they don't speak directly, the way people are looked down at, it is quite mortifying. And actually people are caught in a catch-22 situation. Because on one side we have so many advertisements which are glamorizing and propositioning and tempting. Eat this, eat that. And most of the food that are advertised nowadays, they are all very tempting food which are not just tempting but which are also fat-inducing. So on one side there is the pressure. Enjoy this, eat that and enjoy. Fast food is there. But fast food is also mostly fat food. Fat-inducing food. So anyway, people may fast to get rid of their extra fat. And that is not considered spiritual at all. So asceticism without self-knowledge is imperfect, Prabhupada says. Yes, the capacity to do asceticism may be useful. On the spiritual path, Prabhupada would recommend us to do tapasya in terms of fasting on Ekadashi and also fasting on holy days. Fasting as a tool for health can be adopted by devotees also, just as devotees can use yoga as a tool for health. But the important point is that devotees don't get caught up in that alone and they don't divorce it from its spiritual purpose. So we understand that fasting or yoga, our primary goal is Krishna, and we want to make spiritual advancement and return towards Krishna. And along the way, whatever is required to keep our body healthy, we may do that. Then Prabhupada makes the next point. Empiric knowledge without surrender to the Supreme Lord is also imperfect. So empiric knowledge, Prabhupada is referring here, is using the word for jnanibhya. So one who is a jnani, that person, generally jnana leads to the conception that I am God. Aham Brahma Asmi. So, the conception of Brahma may be different among different people, but quite often the conception is that it is I who am the absolute truth. So, then that is definitely not correct. That is imperfect, Prabhupada. So, Prabhupada is mildly critical of this. He is not saying it is useless, it is a waste of time, it is imperfect. He uses a stronger critique in the next. So, for karmibhya, he says, and fruity work without Krishna consciousness is a waste of time. Shrama eva hi kevalam, as the Bhagavatam says. Shrama is labor. Kevalam. Kevalam is only shrama. Generally, we do labor for some fruit. But if there is only labor and there is no fruit, then that is useless. So that's how Prabhupada translates shrama eva hi kevalam as waste of time. Fruity activities. So now, after describing this, giving this endorsement to the path of yoga, now, yoga, there may be yoga which involves different conceptions. Some yogis are impersonalist, some yogis are personalist. So, different yogis may have different conceptions. So, is Krishna giving a blanket endorsement for yoga in general? No. He recommends yoga, but then what he is implying by yoga, to understand that, we have to look at the next verse. There are many yoga teachers who actually, when they want to prove that Bhagavad Gita recommends yoga, endorses yoga, glorifies yoga, they quote Bhagavad Gita and they quote only 6.46. They don't quote 6.47. 6.47 says, they say yoga is the best path. Why? Krishna says that better than tapasvi is a yogi, better than a jnani is a yogi, better than a karmi is a yogi. So therefore yoga is the best path and we should all follow yoga. That's what they say. But actually Krishna says, what kind of yogi one should be? And then if we look at the next verse, it is clear that Krishna is referring to a bhakti yoga, bhakti yogi. So this is an example of quoting out of context. Krishna is definitely recommending yoga, but if we look at what he is recommending in the context, then he's not just recommending yoga as a sadhana process centered on Ashtanga yoga. He's using yoga as a method of connection. And that connection should be with the personal absolute truth. That is what will become clear in the next verse. So that is 6.47. This is one of the most oft-quoted verses from the Gita Vaishnava Prabhupada. And especially whenever Prabhupada would ask any question about yoga, and Prabhupada would quote this verse to underscore the point that yoga should culminate in bhakti, in Bhagavan. So, 6.47, Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam samaye yukta tamomataha. So, yoginam api sarvesham, among all kinds of yogi, madgate antaratmana, that antaratmana, within oneself, what should madgatein, one thinks about me, makes me the gati, makes one me the goal, shraddhavan, with faith. What does one do with faith? Bhajate yoma, one worships. Same yuktatamo mataha, such a person is the most intimately united with me, yuktatama. So there are many significant words in this. Let's move from downward. There is yuktatama. So generally, there are degrees of endorsement. So there can be good, there can be better, and there is best. So best is the highest endorsement. It is superlative. Good, better, best. So similarly, in Sanskrit, there are superlatives. Yukta. Yukta is good. It's a good, well-situated, well-connected. Krishna has used the word repeatedly in the Bhagavad Gita, in this chapter itself, as well as elsewhere. In this chapter itself, such a person is called yogi. Krishna has used twice. Once he has used in 6.8, and again he has used in 6.18. So let's look at these two uses to understand. And Krishna says something is good, and then something he says is good, better, and best. So if you have no frame of reference, something is good, oh, that's very nice, this thing is good. But then when Krishna says, oh, this is the best, somebody says, this is the best, oh, that means, okay, this is good, but this is the best. So we will look at what Krishna has called yukta, and then we will see look what he has called as yukta tama. So in Sanskrit, there is yukta is like good, yukta tara is like better, and yukta tama is like the best. So the word yukta has been used many times in the Bhagavad Gita, but this is called as yukta. Such a person is yukta. That in that specific way, in this particular chapter, let's look at the places where it is used. So 6.8 is jnana vijnana truptatma kutastho vijitendriya yukta ityuchyate yogi samaloshtashma kanchanaha. So here Krishna is talking about who is yukta, one who is detached. One who is disconnected from material things. The person has knowledge, the person has realization. And because of knowledge and realization, the person is satisfied. Truptatma. And because the person is truptatma, jnana vijnana truptatma, kutastho is well situated, highly situated, high above the material things. And vijite indriyaha, the person has conquered the senses. And such a person is yukta itti uchyate yogi, such a person is called yukta. And then what is the nature of the yukta person? Samaloshtra ashmakanchanaha. Such a person sees everything material equally, whether it be stones or pebbles or gold, such a person sees all of them equally. And then in the next time when he uses the word yukta, now there are many places using yukta, we are just looking at this chapter. Earlier also Krishna has used yukta in 5.24 also. 5.24, there also he says, one who controls material desires. Shaknoti haiva yaha sodhum praksharir vimokshana. This is 5.23 actually. Praksharir vimokshana kama krodhod bhavam vegam sayukta sa sukhi naraha. So one who can tolerate the forces of desire and anger, such a person is yukta, well situated. Then in this chapter also, he uses yadavinityam chittam atmanneva vatishtate nispruha sarva kamebhyo. Yukta ityuchyate tada. So again, the point is negative. Negative means the point is a disconnection. So when a person is disconnected, yada vinyatam chittam, when one has controlled one's consciousness, one's mind, atmanyeva vatishthate, fixed it on the self, nispruha sarva kamebhyo, one is free from all desires, then yukta ityuchyate tadasya, person is yukta, well situated. So Krishna has used the word yukta over there. Now let us see where is used yukta tama. So he is using the word yukta tama. That means that was good, but this is the best. So disconnection from matter is good. So I recommend that. The person is well situated. At least the person will not become more entangled. But connection with the absolute truth is best. So that is good, but this is the best. Yukta tama. So may yukta tamo mataha. The person is best among all the well-connected persons. So what is it that makes the best? Krishna is not talking here in terms of disconnection. He's talking in terms of connection. Not in terms of disconnection with matter, but in terms of connection with him. Yoginam, what is he saying? Among all the kinds of yogis. So those are disconnected from matter, they are yukta. But among all such yogis, yoginam sarvesham, madgatein antaratmana, they live in me, madgatein. So Prabhupada, interestingly, the word-to-word translation of madgatein, he says, abiding in me and always thinking of me. So abide means to live in me, to live in harmony with him. So by thinking of Krishna, we live in Krishna. Madgatein antaratmana, within oneself. Shraddhavan bhajate yomam. So with faith one worships the Supreme Lord. Bhajate. And engages in transcendental service to the Lord. Prabhupada translates bhajate as over here. So now Krishna is there in the heart of everyone. But there can be many levels of understanding. At a faithless level, one may think, oh, I don't know whether Krishna exists in the heart. At another level, one may say, yes, Krishna exists in the heart, but Krishna is just a conception. That means, yes, it is good to think about God, but ultimately one has to go beyond God. So Prabhupada sees through the facade and they say that Mayavadis are also atheistic. Because they ultimately want to reject God. The atheists reject God by saying God doesn't exist. The Mayavadis also reject God by saying that God doesn't exist because we have to go beyond God to a higher reality. So they say God is just a transitional reality, not an ultimate reality. So they make say claim themselves, we are not atheistic, we are transtheistic. Right? As we go beyond belief in God. Well, whatever the terminology, but the point is they are rejecting the personal God. And Krishna is saying that sort of conception is not proper. Shraddhavan. A person should be faithful. And what should be the faith? Yes, the Lord who is conceiving in the heart. That is the ultimate truth. That is the object of my service and worship and surrender and devotion. So, bhajate. With faith one worships. The yogis, the many yogis or impersonal, they say, yes, we have to conceive of the impersonal, conceive of the personal Vishnu in the heart, but after that we have to go beyond. No, there's no going beyond. Krishna is saying that one who thinks about me is the highest. Madgatein antaratmana. One who thinks about me is the highest. Shraddhavan bhajate yoma. One who worships me. Such a person is the highest. Same yukta tamo mataha. Now, Srila Prabhupada's purport has many sections. So Prabhupada initially focuses on the third, bhajate. So Prabhupada says bhajate doesn't just mean worship, bhajate means service. So we can worship many people, but we have to serve the absolute truth. And he connects this word bhajate with another verse from the Bhagavatam, the 11th canto, 11.5.3. So, yaisham purusham saksham atma prabhavam ishvaram na bhajanti abjananti. So, yaisham purusham sakshad. So, this is the glorification of the Supreme Lord. And this is the absolute truth. Purusham sakshad. He is the original person. Prabhupada translates it. Primeval Lord. Atma prabhavam ishvaram. So, he's the controller. He's the ishvara. And he's atma prabhavam. Atma prabhavam means the source of all living beings. So, if one doesn't worship such a person, na bhajanti, one doesn't worship, then what does one do? Defies, because of ignorance, not just ignorance, but misunderstanding. Avajananti. So, one misunderstands. One defies the Supreme Lord. And what happens?
Sthanad Brashtaha. Sthanad Brashtaha means to fall away. So Yoga Brashta was a word which is used in this chapter also. One who is deviated from the path of yoga, one who falls in the path of yoga, one becomes corrupted. So Sthanad Brashtaha means one who becomes corrupted and falls away. Patantyadha means one falls down. So now will Prabhupada translate, will certainly fall down. So bhajanti refers to the worship, Prabhupada says. Not just worship. That bhajanti refers to worship is what common people think. But bhajanti refers to service. So one can worship some devata, one may choose not to worship some devata. That's up to a person. But when we understand that we are intrinsically connected with the Supreme Lord, and we are forever meant for love and service. So if we don't love and serve the Supreme Lord, then we fall away from our spiritual position and we fall back to the material world of temptations. And Prabhupada explains how ultimately all yogas are meant to culminate in bhakti yoga. So here Prabhupada is using the word yoga in the sense of the process. There's jnana yoga, there's ashtanga yoga. So these are all, if we imagine a ladder or a staircase which goes to multiple stories. So first story, second story, third story, fourth story, like that. There are multiple stories in the staircase. So the topmost story, the topmost floor is the place where one wants to go. So that topmost level of realization is the Bhagavan realization. And now to just enhance this metaphor, consider that there is a staircase. Sometimes there are staircases which don't go all the way up. So imagine there are four levels. There are four stories from the ground story onwards. Ground floor, first floor, second floor, third floor, fourth floor. Now there is one staircase which goes only to the first floor. The second staircase goes only to the second floor. The third staircase goes only to the third floor. And there is one staircase which goes to the fourth floor. So now, the staircase which saw the first floor we could say like Swarga. Then there is Brahman, then there is Paramatma, and there is Bhagavan. So the process, the staircase of Karma Kanda, that will take one to Swarga. The staircase of Jnana will take one to Brahman. The staircase of Yoga will take one to Paramatma. And the staircase of Bhakti alone will take one to Bhagavan. So the building itself has multiple stories, multiple floors, and one has to go to the highest story. So Prabhupada says, what is Ashtanga Yoga? Actually, there is only one goal, that is to go up. So that is to go up. That is the only goal. And one ultimately wants to get to the topmost level, because that is where we will get the topmost fulfillment. But to get there to the topmost level, one has to go in different ways. And what does different way mean? Actually, those who take a staircase, he takes only to the first floor. Then what happens? It's not that they're permanently trapped over there. You know, these floors are connected and they can find out where is the other staircase which will take me to the fourth floor. And then they will reach the fourth floor. So when we talk about different yogas, we can talk about them in two different ways. One way is that these other yogas are themselves independent path which takes us to particular destinations. And also the other understanding is they are assistant paths which can help one ultimately to reach the highest destination if one has bhakti element within oneself. If one eventually takes to the bhakti path, not just bhakti elements, one takes to the bhakti path. Now, when I say the other yogas are independent, they are not entirely independent. We'll look in the later chapters, especially in the 9th chapter, how other yogas also need to have bhakti element within them to be successful. That will come repeatedly. In the 8th chapter it will come. But the point is that here, it means we can look at these paths as two different ways. That as separate staircase, which takes to a particular level. But ultimately one wants to go to the 4th floor. So if one wants to go to the 4th floor, then it's best to take the staircase which takes one directly to the 4th floor. If one takes a staircase, he just takes one to the first floor and goes up, looks around, oh, I reached here, I came here, let me see, oh, this is Swarga. And afterwards, one comes back, oh, again on the staircase. One thing, I went to Swarga, I came back. No, that's not the goal. There is something higher than Swarga. So, Prabhupada says over here in the purport, now with this example, we can understand. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions towards the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to realize, you know, like climbing up this multiple story building. So now let's, what Prabhupada says, let's try to understand this with a slide over here. So bhakti yoga is the most complete yoga. Why? It involves action, introspection and meditation, which are the limbs of the other yogas. So action in karma yoga, karma yoga is going to do action, and that's a positive aspect of karma yoga. Then there is introspection. Introspection means thinking within, and speculation, contemplation, all that is there. So to try to understand what is the absolute truth, there's jnana yoga. And meditation is more a directed thinking, which tries to go towards the absolute truth. That is also there. So now, actually, bhakti yoga is the highest, because all these three are included within bhakti yoga. There is action, there is introspection, there is meditation. And beyond that, ultimately, all our faculties follow the heart. Whatever we want to do, ultimately, if our heart is in something, everything else comes in. Now, when we allow something or someone, naturally, we physically render service to that person, we mentally think about that person, we intellectually connect with that object of love. So the heart, the body, the mind, intelligence, everything follows the heart. So if the heart is involved, then all other beings are ultimately involved. Because the heart is the governing faculty for us. So for all of us, you know, even people who are intellectuals, they're primarily head driven, they also have a heart. And actually, when their heart may not be very active regularly, that means they may not be too emotional, normally speaking. But when they do become emotional, their emotions do take control of their lives. And certainly when material emotions take control, that is undesirable. But spiritual emotions taking control is supremely desirable. So that's why our ultimate goal is to connect with Krishna. And everything follows the heart. So that's how bhakti yoga, because it activates the heart. In bhakti yoga, we connect with our heart towards Krishna. That's why it is the topmost of all yogas. So in this way, Prabhupada explains in the purport that how in the first time in the Bhagavad Gita, he will talk about how Krishna is all beautiful. So the ideal yogi, madgatena antaratmana, Prabhupada explained. What does that mean? The ideal yogi concentrates the attention on Krishna, who is called Shyam Sundar. So basically, Prabhupada is giving the description of from Brahma Samhita over here, with some other things added. And then the Brahma Jyoti comes from him, and then he incarnates in various incarnations. He is known as the son of Mother Yashoda, and he is called as Krishna Govinda Vasudeva. So then Prabhupada talks about how can one contemplate like this? Through the process of bhakti. So here he quotes from the famous verse from the Shvita Shudra Upanishad 6.23. Yasya Devi para bhakti yatha devi tatha gurau tasyaite kathita yartha prakashante mahatmanaha. So those who have implicit faith in the spiritual master. Yasya Devi para bhakti. So yatha devi tatha gurau. So one has para bhakti for the Dev, and along with that one has bhakti similarly for the Guru. Tasyaite kathita yartha. The artha of all this kathita will be prakashante, will be illumined, will be revealed. Mahatmana. So interestingly here, those who have faith, even if they are seekers and they are striving for understanding, they are referred to as Mahatma in this verse. So Prabhupada is explaining here about the point of Shraddha. So he's taking systematically. First he talked about the point of Bhajate. Then he talked about Madgate. Who is the person who has to meditate on? And now he's talking about Shraddhavan Bhajate Yoma. Shraddha. That means faith. So the faith that actually
by the mercy of Krishna and by the mercy of Guru, prakashante mahatmana, things will be revealed to us. And then Prabhupada quotes a famous definition of bhakti from the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Now, there are 11 principal Upanishads, and there are many other Upanishads which are among the 100 Upanishads which are also important. So, among those important Upanishads, which especially talks about the worship of Gopal, is called Gopal Tapani. And it is frequently quoted by our acharyas. So, let us see what the Gopal Tapani Upanishad says. It gives a definition of bhakti also. Bhakti asya bhajanam tat iha mutropadhi nairasyenamushmin manaha kalpanam etad eva nishkarmyam. So, bhakti asya bhajanam. So, bhakti means devotional service. And iha and amutra. Iha and amutra, this usage came in the Bhagavad Gita also in 6.40. When Krishna showed Arjuna that partha naiveha namutra vinashastasya vidyate, either in this world or in the next world. Iha amutra. That in this or the next world, transcendentalists will not meet with disaster. So, bhaktir asya bhajanam, we worship the Supreme Lord, we serve the Supreme Lord, tad iha mutra. That means one doesn't have nair asya. One doesn't have desires for gain either in this world or in the next world. In this life or the next life. And then, manaha kalpanam etadeva naishkarmyam. So, should absorb the mind in Krishna without any desire for fruitive activity. And that is actually naishkarma, that is actually bhakti. So, this is the perfection. Now, after describing this, very categorical way. So, this is the first time in a very categorical, emphatic way Krishna has said that connecting with Him is the highest truth. Okay, He has talked about fixing the mind earlier on Him. But earlier when He had talked about it, it was more of in 2.61, he talked about fixing the mind on Him so that one could become sense-controlled. So, like that, He has talked about connecting with Him on several occasions. Where all has He talked? As I said, 2.61, Stani Sarvani Sanyamya Yukta Sita Matparaha Yukta Sita Matparaha. So, that is very helpful, that somebody who wants to control the senses, Yukta Sita Matparaha. So, that person should fix the mind on Me. But here also Krishna has not revealed Himself as the ultimate truth to be meditated on. He said, okay, those who want to sense control, they can fix their mind only, then they will be able to control the senses. But so like that, He has referred again in 3.30, and that He has said that we should offer the fruits of the work to Me. There also, yes, is the goal of the fruits of work. But again further, now nothing clearly has been mentioned. In the fourth chapter also, Krishna says, you should have faith in Me. Those who do, and faith in Me and My words. And He has talked about how in 4.4, Krishna talks about His position several times. But we are talking now here about fixing the mind on Krishna. So, in 4.9, He says that one should understand My work, Janma Karma Chame Divyam, then the person will attain liberation. And then for that, Manmaya Mam Upashruta, He says in 4.10, fix the mind on Me. And then many in the past have become liberated, so you can also become liberated. In 4.35, Krishna says that those 4.34 tadviddhi pranipateena priprashneena sevaya, that surrender to the Guru. And then what is the result of surrendering to the Guru? In 4.35 Krishna says that this person sees all living beings to be situated in Me. Jnatvana punarmoham evam yasisi pandava yena bhutanya sheshani drakshasyatmanya thomai. You see all living beings as spiritual atmani and thomai in Me. So he's talking about the relationship of all living beings with Him. In the fifth chapter, He has also said that actually there is only one reference to Mam in the fifth chapter, where 5.29 He says that everything should be offered to Me. I am the ultimate Bhoktaram Yagitapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Srudam Sarvabhutanam Gyatva Mam Shanti Mrichati. I am the Bhokta of everything. So, in this way, Krishna has talked repeatedly in the previous chapters, but never as emphatically. He is talking about it. In the 6th chapter also we discuss where all Krishna talks about Mam. He mentioned it in 6.14.15. We have discussed this, I will not repeat that. Matsam, first is Yukta Sita Matparaha and Matsam Stham Adigachyati. Then again He talks about Mam in 6.30, 31, 32, where it's Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra and sarvabhutasthitam yo mam bhajati ekatvam asthitah. And 6.30-31, he talks about mam. So the mam has come again and again, but it has never come as emphatically as it is coming here. Here at the end of the chapter, Krishna is telling, one who thinks about me, one who abides in me, with faith, serving me, shraddhavan bhajate yo mam samaya yukta tamo mata. Such a person is most intimately connected with me. So, if we look at the flow of the chapters, so what is happening in the first six chapters? Krishna is recommending to Arjuna something far more subtle, sophisticated, sublime, satisfying, empowering than just the dialectic. Dialectic means choice. Okay, debate. Two opposites in a debate. Arjuna's dialectic was action or renunciation. So, either should I act or should I renounce? That was the only thing that Arjuna was thinking about. But Krishna has revealed something much more subtle. He said, yes, don't think of something simply another action and renunciation. Actually, action can be what Arjuna thought as two options. Krishna has explained that actually action and renunciation are not just two options. He said within action also there can be variety. There can be renunciation in action. So, what was two, Krishna brings the third one which integrates the two. There can, instead of action or renunciation, you can have action with renunciation or renunciation in action. And that has been the overall tenor. And the connection with Krishna has been just talked about briefly. But now, in this verse, and from here we'll start the seventh chapter, the focus will become much more on mam. So now it's not just renunciation in action. From now onwards, it will be devotion in action. That means one performs action with devotion internally, not just renunciation. Yes, I am not connected with the world and still I will act. Yes, I am not connected with the world, but I want to be connected with Krishna. And the more I am connected with Krishna, the more I will make spiritual advancement. So, spiritual advancement will not be in the bhakti section, which is start from 7.1. Spiritual advancement is judged not by how much one is disconnected from the world, but by how much one is connected with Krishna. So we'll see from the seventh chapter itself a new mood develops in the Bhagavad Gita. The mood is, till now it has been of disconnection, rejection, detachment. But now from 7.1 onwards it will be connection, attachment, devotion. And this inaugurates, so say the first six chapters are actually setting the scene for the heart of the Bhagavad Gita. That is chapter 7 to 12. Chapter 7 to 12 are the chapters talking about bhakti. And these chapters will reveal, will put the spotlight on Krishna. So the Bhagavad Gita's flow is such that Arjuna's spotlight is on the body. Krishna moves the spotlight from the body to the soul, in the second chapter onwards. And then the spotlight focuses on the soul. Okay, how can the soul be liberated? That is by karma yoga, not just by simple renunciation, but by sublime action. And then, while focusing on the Atma, now Krishna moves the spotlight further from the Atma to the Paramatma. And that Paramatma is revealed to be Krishna himself. So in this way, the flow of thought of the Bhagavad Gita will move on. So let's look at the seventh chapter now. So in the seventh chapter, let's look at the overview of the seventh chapter. There are two broad sections, seven chapter. First is Know Krishna in Full, that is from verses 1 to 12. And then from 13 to 25, the second section talks about surrender to Krishna. And in that, now each of these two sections, there are further subdivisions which we can have. So, in Know Krishna in Full, first is 1 to 3 is the glory of knowledge about Krishna. Then 4 to 7, what does knowledge of Krishna mean? It means that Krishna is the source of everything, material and spiritual. And then 8 to 12 talks about how Krishna pervades everything. Krishna doesn't just exist, but he pervades everything. And then 13 to 25 talks about surrender to Krishna. So, in 13 to 25, in surrender to Krishna, first 13 to 14 is why surrender?
Now 15 is one verse which talk just refers to those who don't surrender. 16 talks about those who do surrender. Then 20 to 25 talks about those who surrender to Krishnetara. Krishnetara means those who surrender things something other than Krishna. So actually there are 30 verses in this chapter. So there are 3 sections. So third section doesn't have any divisions directly. Third section is from 26 to 30, which talks about how the soul gets liberated by knowledge about Krishna. So this chapter talks about shifts the spotlight to knowledge about Krishna. And as the chapter is called as knowledge of the absolute. So there will be 10 chapters which will call it an opulence of the absolute, where the focus will be in the vibhuti of Krishna. But here the focus is on general knowledge about Krishna. So there is of course general and specific knowledge, but the focus is on knowledge about Krishna. So first we get knowledge about Krishna, then knowledge should not just remain theoretical, knowledge should be transformational. So that transformation is surrender to Krishna, that's described in the second section. And then how the transformation ultimately leads to liberation, that is discussed in the third section. So in this way, the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita shows how one can attain the perfection which yoga promises. So the connection between the 6th and the 7th chapter is that in the 6th chapter Krishna has said that as yogi mai vartate, he is talking about Sthipa yogi will always live in me, Sthipa yogi will always be liberated, sarvatha vartamano pis yogi mai vartate. He talked about it in 6.31, that he will always stay in me. So he is talking about liberation in the 6th chapter. Now Krishna will give another process of liberation based on knowledge about him. One doesn't have to go through the laborious process of Ashtanga Yoga, going to the forest and renouncing everything. Krishna will offer an alternative process over here. So that alternative process is described in the 7th chapter, or starting from the 7th chapter. It is indicated, it will be described further in detail in 9th chapter, again in 12th chapter. Repeatedly it will be described. But here the point is, Krishna has a particular thought flow going on. And he is now giving Arjuna an alternative. The alternative is that not just renunciation in action, but devotion in action. So let's look at the 7.1. This is among the verses on which Srila Prabhupada gave the maximum classes. 7.1 in the Bhagavad Gita. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Maya Saptamanaha Partha Yogam Yunjinmada Ashrayaha Asamshayam Samagrammam Yathagyasyasi Tachrunu. So, Mai Asakta Manaha. So, with the mind attached to me, O Partha, Yogam Yunjan Madashrayaha. Engage in yoga, taking shelter of me. Asamshayam Samagrammam. You'll become free from all doubt. Asamshayam Samagrammam Gyasyasi. Then you'll know me completely. And how all that will happen? Shrunu, here. So now there we can have an alternative way of looking at this verse. This verse is a direct call for hear. By hearing one will attain glory. So hearing is important. But how is hearing important? Hearing is the means by which Krishna will tell how this will work. And hearing is also the means by which we will move along. See, hearing tells us the path, but hearing is also the path. That's interesting. See, hearing shows the path and hearing is the path. What is the difference between the two? By hearing you come to know, okay, how will I make spiritual advancement? How will I move closer to Krishna? That is true, but along with that, hearing is the path also. Why? Because hearing itself increases our attraction to Krishna. Shrunu. By hearing, it is one of the limbs of bhakti. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam. Prahlad Maharaj described the 9 limbs of bhakti and he says hearing is one of them. And Prabhupada often would say that everything begins with hearing. So hearing shows the path and hearing is the path. By the path is not the only path. There are 9 limbs of devotional service, but hearing is another very important limbs. So when we want to look at hearing as is the path, so Krishna is telling here, is hear about how all this will happen. Tat shrunu, hear about how
You will come to know me in truth, you will become free from doubt, your mind will become attached to me. Hear about it. That will describe the seventh chapter. So that is, hearing shows the path. But we want to look at hearing is the path. We can look at the flow of this verse in a different way. And that flow will connect it with the previous chapter. So in the previous chapter, Krishna has said that the yogi who always thinks about me is the topmost yogi. So now in this chapter, Krishna will say, now if one is always thinking about Krishna, one is naturally has to be attached to Krishna. And we cannot think about something constantly unless we have an affection for that thing. So similarly, Krishna is telling over here that if you want to become attached to me, what is the process? This is the process I'll tell you. So let us look at this process. So what we are doing is, from the first chapter to sixth chapter, there has been a flow which is going up to Maya Asakta Manaha. Now how to madgateena antaratmana, always thinking about me, shraddhavan bhajate yama. So now, but that process involved karma yoga, then ashtang yoga, then detachment, and then attachment to Krishna. Detachment in terms of complete indifference to material reality and attachment to spiritual reality. Now Krishna will describe another process to reach the same ladder. So we often talk about the example of a staircase and an elevator. Bhakti yoga is like the elevator. And the other yogic processes are like a staircase. That is true. So here we will see how Krishna will not outline the elevator. So the goal which is glorified in the sixth chapter at the end is madgateena antaratmana shraddhavan bhajate. That thinking of oneself within the law, within one's heart, within oneself, and faithfully and diligently serving that Lord. So that is centered on attachments. So how one will get attachment? Let's look at this verse from a different perspective. So, mai asakta manaha is the goal. So, let's look at the verse from bottom up. So, shrunu, by hearing what will happen? We keep hearing regularly. Then, jnastisi samagram, we will know Krishna properly. We will know Krishna completely. Samagram. And when we know Krishna properly, then what? Asamvishayam, we will become free from doubts. The more our knowledge increases, our doubts decrease, they get clarified, they get removed, they get purified. Ashraya. And when we understand, actually, Krishna is Surudam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna is my greatest well-wisher. Krishna is the ultimate object of my love. Then naturally, what I'll do is, I'll take shelter of him. So the Ashraya. Madashraya. When we take shelter of Krishna, shelter of Krishna is not just some abstract conception. It is a practical action. So that is yogam yunjan. We practice devotional service. Yogam yunjan. And then what happens? By the practice of devotional service, asakta manaha. Our mind will become attached to Krishna. So, in this way, through these six stages, one will attain perfection. Asakta manaha, one will attain perfection. That is what Krishna is talking about over here. So, the goal is asakta manaha. Now let's look at this progression once again. When we hear about Krishna, what happens? By hearing about Krishna. By hearing about Krishna, we get samagramma. The more we hear, we understand. We hear past times about Krishna, we hear the philosophy about Krishna. All this deepens our understanding. So our jnana increases. And you know, samagram, we will know him in full. What does full mean? Full doesn't mean complete in the terms of knowing Krishna completely. No one can know Krishna completely. In fact, in the 10th chapter, Arjuna will say, that swayameva atmanatmanam, that only you know yourself. Nobody else knows. And actually the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta says that even God doesn't know himself fully. Because God's energies are expanding. So, here when samagram jnasasi means, we will know fully according to our capacity. So, we cannot know the absolute truth in totality. But we can know him full according to our capacity. And when we know him according to our capacity, we become purified by that. And what are the impurities that are removed? That is samshaya. So, the doubts. That now, doubts can be from very basic to complex also. Does God exist? Does God care for me? There can be kind of doubts, but then a doubt can be, is the Holy Name so powerful that it will give ultimate liberation? Is the Holy Name the only way to liberation? Ultimately in this Kali Yuga, is Krishna the highest aspect of the Absolute Truth? So all these, if we keep hearing shrunu, then asamnishayam, the doubts will go away. The acharyas have written so many books, and there are so many devotees who have studied these books, and their scholarship is available to us. If we just seek it, then does this go away? Then we will have ashraya. So when we want to learn about Krishna, we don't want to learn about Krishna just for the sake of entertainment. We want to learn about Krishna for the sake of attainment of shelter. It is not entertainment, but it is attainment. Attainment of what? Shelter. Not Krishna to become our ultimate shelter. So when we get the shelter of Krishna, ashraya, then yoga meaning, we'll wholeheartedly start practicing yoga. Which yoga? That is bhakti yoga. That is yoga which will lead to asakta manaha, which will make our mind attached to Krishna. So getting the mind attached to Krishna is the perfection of our spiritual life. It is the perfection. Once our mind is attached to Krishna, it will not get distracted to anything else. When the mind is not distracted to anything else, we will attain constant, not just peacefulness, but joyfulness. Because Krishna is supremely joyful. So, by connection with Krishna, we will attain the supreme joyfulness. Let us look at Srila Prabhupada's purport here. Now, Prabhupada explains that Prabhupada also points to the connection between these two. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the 6th chapter. What was directed over there? Madgatena antaratmana. Fix the mind on the Supreme Lord. And then he says that concentrating your mind upon Krishna is possible by prescribed devotional service in 9 different forms, of which Shravanam is the most important. That's why Krishna is saying over here, Shrunu. And now Prabhupada quotes this section of verse which we have discussed in our Ishopanishad study. How the heart becomes purified. Let's look at these briefly. This is actually section chapter 2 of the first canto, 1.2.17-21. These verses are actually the most quoted verses from the Bhagavatam by Srila Prabhupada. You know, any one section that Srila Prabhupada quotes the most. From the Bhagavatam, if we look at it consistently, this is 1.2 chapter, and the verses starting from 5 to 21 roughly, 6 to 21. 6 is Savai Pumsam Paro Dharmo. So these verses are quoted very frequently by Srila Prabhupada, and there's a series of lectures also he gave that's called as the book Dharma, the Way of Transcendence. So here, Krishna describes the process. How Shrunu, so now this verse is saying from Shrunu, Mahi Asakta Manaha will come. So how that will happen, that is elaborated in the sequence of verses. So let's look at the verses. Shunvatam Swakatha Krishna. So when we hear about Krishna, then this is described from the perspective of Krishna, that is Swakatha. For Krishna it is own katha. So just hearing this katha and speaking this katha is purifying. Punya Shravana Kirtana. It is purifying in and of itself. They are pious activities. Punya. But additionally, when we hear about Krishna, Hridayantasto Yabhadrani, that Lord, He is situated in our own hearts, Antasto. And what does He do? He removes, Vidhunoti Yabhadrani. He washes away, cleanses away our Abhadra, our impurities. And why does He do that? Sarutsatam. He is the well-wisher of all living beings, but He is especially the well-wisher of those who are transcendentalists. No, He wants the welfare of all living beings. A doctor wants to cure all people. But if a patient is especially cooperative, a person is diligent, naturally the doctor's therapy works more. Doctor is also a person. You know, if a patient is far from being cooperative, is hostile, is cursing and kicking, not at all cooperating, then naturally what happens is the doctor will still do the duty. So like that, Krishna is present in the heart of all living beings, always, irrespective of whether they glorify Him or defy Him. But still, naturally, Krishna is a person, and those who cooperate and those who try to devote themselves to Him, Krishna reciprocates. He says, you want to be helped, I'll definitely help you. So for those who hear about Krishna, the purification happens in two ways. Just the sound vibration itself is purifying. But along with that, our submissive reception of the sound vibration activates the presence of Krishna within our heart, and then Krishna also purifies us internally. And then what happens? Nashtaprayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya bhagavati ruttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. So, nashtaprayeshu. So, most of the anarthas, praya means most of them. Abhadreshu, they get destroyed. Nashta. But how? Nityam bhagavata sevaya. By serving the Bhagavata. So who is the Bhagavata over here? It's the book Bhagavata, but essentially it's also the person Bhagavata. So both through both of them we get to hear Krishna Katha. So the same process is being continued. So first it has been talking about by hearing Krishna cleanses our heart. But then this verse goes on for all. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. So what happens after that is that Lord Uttama Shloka. For him, bhakti awakens in our heart. So first it talks about we become detached from the negative and we become attached to the positive. Bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. So what is required for naishtiki bhakti? Why don't we have naishtiki bhakti right now? Naishtiki means steady, unshakable. So that we don't have because the modes are interfering with our connection with Krishna. So what happens by the practice of bhakti steadily is tadarajastamo bhavaha kamalo bhadayashchaye Cheta etayana vidham sthitam sattve prasidati. So, rajastamo bhavaha. So, because of the modes of passion and ignorance, there is kama and lobha. They go away. Anavidham. We become freed from them. And we become situated in sattva. And what is the way we are situated in sattva? Prasidati. The mode of goodness itself makes us joyful. In the 14th chapter, we will see that one of the characters of the mode of goodness is sukhem. Sattvam sukhe sanjayati. So, when there are no longer the pulls of the lower modes, then when we are situated in sukha, we can move forward steadily. Sattam sukhe prasidati, sitam sukhe prasidati. So we become joyfully situated in goodness. And actually, you know, resentful devotional service doesn't lead to much spiritual advancement. Joyful devotional service leads to spiritual advancement. Resentful means, you know, why is Krishna the enjoyer? Why only Krishna has to enjoy? I want to enjoy also. So, that sort of devotional service is resentful, but when the devotional service is joyful, then we make rapid spiritual advancement. So, evam prasanna manaso, when we are engaging in devotional service thus, evam prasanna manaso, bhagavad bhakti yogataha, bhagavad bhakti yogataha. By the practice of bhakti yoga, we engage in bhagavat tattva vijnanam, mukta sangasya jayate. So with a pleasant mind, we engage in devotional service, then the Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana, the scientific knowledge about Krishna awakens in our heart. And when that scientific knowledge about Krishna awakens, then Mukta Sangasya Jayate, we become liberated from all kinds of contamination. Mukta Sangha. Mukta Sangha means any contact with matter. So earlier it was described that one becomes freed from the lower modes, but now, it is described once we become situated in goodness and practice devotional service, then we become free from all contaminations. All kind of sangha we become victim. And then what happens is the most dramatic here. That is, now Prabhupada is using this to shrunu and asamshaya to explain these two verses from the Bhagavad Gita 7.1. So, bhiddite hridaya granthis chidyante sarva samshaya shiyante chasya karmani drishte vatmanishvare. So, vidyate hridaya granthes. So, all the attachments that are there in the heart, they get cut off. Vidyate get cut off. The attachments that are there in the heart, they are all what keep us bound to the material world. But, chidyante, but when we come understand Krishna and we become enlivened by that knowledge of Krishna, then all the attachments fall away. And then doubts also go away. Chidyante sarva samshayaha. Chidyante, cut off. So the doubts are also destroyed. And then naturally when the desires and the doubts go away, then we don't do any activity apart from Krishna, apart from service to Krishna. So, kshiyante chasya karmani. Therefore, all fruitive activity stops. And, drishtevatmanishvare. So, one gets the transcendental vision. One understands and becomes attached to Krishna. So, this is how this wonderful process of bhakti works. We'll continue discussing this in the next chapter, next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.